water was up over my well in Tunbridge, and I thought, look, this will clear. I can tell you, our front door burst clean through, and it's a 5-lever lock, PVC door, at 125. And I can tell you what, two men couldn't put that door in. Such was the strength of the water. And if we had been on the ground floor at that stage, we wouldn't have been a bungalow. There's nobody to survive. The water came in that quick. It was just like somebody opened a river, like the floodgates, and it came at us. The water was coming up the stairs, and at a rapid rate, and I was going, I said to Debbie, we've got to go to the rispace here, and then we remembered about the dog. But I can tell you, the fear, and I'm just sitting today, and I'm sore all over, and I realise I think I'd fought Conor McGregor, for God's sake. I'm not sore, but, just from the whole anxiety, trying to get the dogs, I waded through 5 foot of water, right up to my neck, swam around the back of the house. But,
You swam around the back of your house?
I had to swim around the back of my house, get on top of a bin, and go back again and get like a candle type holder that my wife gave me to smash our utility window. Now it's a double glazed window, and I was beating it, and I don't know how our bin was even there, because every other bin in my car was floating beside me, and I'm thinking, what's going on here? How I got in that window and saved that dog this day?
Is the dog okay?
Dog's brilliant.
Are you okay?
I am just... I think it takes its toll on you. I think the day or two after you realise, listen, what could have been?
The height of the flood is coming down in this lady's house. It was Graham. He's trying to do the right thing. He's been hearing a wee kitten in this... You think it's in the garage, Graham?
Yeah.
I'll keep paddling here, but we think that this garage door is open, and hopefully the wee kitten can be got. And it's not a big thing, but for Geraldine, whose wee cat it is, it'll be at least some comfort. So Graham's trying to get this wee roller, and I'll try and push the paddle against it.
Here.
Here, kitty.
Solid.
Are you solid there?
Yeah, this is... Well,
hey,
anyway.
Hey, so we're trying... This garage is literally a floating, but there's a hole in the roof. And the wee kitty cat, I can hear it. Come here. Graham, I think she's outside.
Is she in the bushes?
She's in the bushes. Hang on. Graham, you push me away.
Come here, darling.
Come here, I'll see you. Keep pushing, Graham. See her. Here. Come on, you see us.
Here, hold on.
I got her. Here, go you there. You sit in the seat. You sit on the seat, darling. Now stay down there. Okay, get your mummy. Stay down there. Is this Geraldine?
This is Geraldine.
I thought we were in there.
Me.
So there's Munchkin.
That.
Who's that?
That's Beauty.
Beauty, there is mummy.
It is Beauty.
Come on. There we go. There you go, Geraldine.
Oh, hello there, wee thing.
Oh, my goodness.
Were you scared? Huh?
Geraldine, look, I know it's a typical, but what a nightmare. Your garage is floating and heartbreaking. I know.
Heartbroken is right. Heartbroken, and had all the house done on the inside before. I just came back from America, too, on Saturday.
Here's Conor McDermott, scampering down the right-hand side. First touch was a little bit heavy, but he still got it back in. There's Ronan Hill. Oh, yes! What a goal from Ronan Hill, who has the honour of scoring the first goal at the new Brandywell. And it comes in the 9th minute of the game, and it brings the fans to their feet. A goal to savour, and one which will go into the history books. Derry City lead Limerick by 1-0. A belter from Hill into the top corner.
Hi, I'm Chloe.
Hello, my name's Tres.
Hello, I'm Shannon.
Hello, I'm Kiera McCartney.
Hi, I'm Zoe O'Donnell.
Hi, I'm Nathal.
Hi, I'm Avie.
Hi, I'm Kiera McLaughlin, temporary teacher of Irish here.
Have you all been watching Derry Girls?
Yeah,
all the time.
Never miss it.
And do any of you in particular, and feel free to point and name names, do you identify with any of the characters?
Zoe's definitely Michelle.
She's just pure good crack, and I'm just all about the crack. So she's pure relatable. She just always feels like having a joke about and all. That's just like me.
Do you watch it with your mum and dad or anything like that?
It's a bit cringy sometimes.
Yeah. What's cringy about it?
The language and some of the jokes, you're kind of going, oh God.
They're thinking, do you go on like that in school?
I'm not. Do you actually talk to like, back to teachers like that and all? I feel hardly.
My father found out about it. He was the one that would have stopped me from going, simply because our family are adopted, and the words Daddy said to me was, if your mother had done that, I wouldn't have had the pleasure of taking you out of a home. That made me crumble.
Was it a very lonely experience?
Absolutely. Having to travel on my own, never having flown before, never been to England before, having to ask a policeman in England, knowing that I was doing something which is illegal in this country. Given my political views, I didn't speak to policemen anyway. And that policeman was so kind and genuine that I just ended up crying with him. And he was lovely. And I regret not having got his name to thank him, because the words he said to me were, love, it's okay. You weren't the first, and you won't be the last. That kind of made me cry, but it also made me think of, yeah, there is humanity in this world.
Well, I never thought this day would come. In these troubled times, when the very nature of democracy has been trashed by any number of pop-up dictators the world over, can I stand in the way of the purest expression of democracy that one can find in this weary world? Should the principles of a bitter and twisted, idealistic but weary BBC presenter be allowed to trump the will of the collective? The answer, oh themesters, my friends, is no. Some Yumfla, Jim from Woodburn and others, valiantly tried to rescue me from this fate by quoting from the terms and conditions of this programme, but alas, I can't stand in the way of democracy. To finish our programme today, this is Chris de Burgh, and Don't Pay the Ferryman. From me, Stephen McCauley. Bye for now.
A bit surreal at the minute, after what happened at the start of the season and that. No, it's just great now to get over the line, and it was good to finish off with a good 1-3-0. It's hard to work.
And you played a big part in it again yourself. What did you make of your own contribution? You stepped up to the mark.
I stepped up to the mark again. That's what the captain's for. Like, there's different types of captains. There's captains that's focal and all, but I tend to try and do the business on the pitch, like, and let the older heads speak in the change room.
And what did that moment feel like when you got to lift the trophy?
It was unbelievable. So it's great, because it was such a slow-goal season. Like, obviously, I'm going to say again what happened at the start, like, with the Riverside and that, and we had to go away every week for, I think, a couple of months, and we weren't sure whether the match was going to be at Walton Park or Limavady, and it's just great to finally get over the line now, and it's good to go out and win.
Well, the more or less that if you don't bring your child or your whatever to a certain area, the repercussions will be a lot more. So you take it whatever that means. It could be, should be with the, but whenever.
And as a father, what goes through your head whenever you're told that?
Oh, 3 million things, quite honestly. No, do you want to bring it to your door? Your partner, your wife's there, scared, and they want them to say no, come and get them, they kick a door down. God knows what else happens to that. Things go wrong, people get dead or shot, or whatever.
So the fear is the alternative, what might happen if you don't...
Bring your child here, exactly.
What goes through a father's head whenever you're taking your son to a location knowing that he's going to be shot?
It's just not right. I couldn't describe it, to be quite honest with you, with the feelings on that night went through my head.
Were you there when it happened?
I was there when it happened. And it stood there and noted it. But it's one of the things you have to do as a parent.
That would be, Kieran, beyond most people's comprehension, what you felt you had to do that night. How does a father cope with what he's saying in front of him?
It was hard. Like, really, really hard.
For me, it's really important to know the story behind the milk. So if I know that somebody has had a lot of trauma and a lot of pain involved in getting to that point, and because I'm a breastfeeding counsellor, obviously I understand that. So I come from that point where I want to know their story. Twice now I've made glass for families whose babies have died, and I've had their milk, and that's really, really powerful to have that, and made glass with it. And then there are people who are very emotional about their journeys, their breastfeeding journeys, who want to have some kind of healing and connection to this process, this time, and how important it was for them. And they feel that the glass is able to offer that.
I'll get the door.
That's what I feel it represents anyway, and that's what the mothers and the families are coming back to me with, is it's not just for mum, it's not just for her, it's for everybody.
We were in doing our exams one year, and there was a full-scale gun battle going on outside. And a boy went running past the window, and Father McGoldrick opened the window and calls out to this guy. Now, he's wearing a combat jacket and a hood over his head, carrying his armor light. And Father McGoldrick says, called him by name. Says, Father Coulter wants to speak to you. And off this guy went.
He knew the boy.
5 minutes, would you hear this? 5 minutes later.
No names, Jerry, don't put me in court.
No names, right. Not at all. The same boy comes running down, comes past the window, and shouts to the rest of the boys that's all out shooting down at the Maxwell and the Brandywell, right? Shouts at them, here, boys, bunk them, Susie, knock it off. These boys are on an exam. And the shooting stopped, right? The shooting stopped instantly. The bell went for the end of the exam, and so did the first volley of shots off. I swear, it was as normal as the day is long.
You get up in the morning, you, of course, you have to go to work and so forth, but when you come back and close the door, it feels like a heavy cloak, and that's all I can describe it. A heavy cloak on your shoulders, and it seems to get heavier and heavier as the day and evening goes on. First thing in the morning, I think of my son, James, and last thing at night. But during the day, of course, he's with me all the time.
How do you feel about the people that planted that bomb in Omagh?
I hate them. I know it's a strong word. I hate what they've done.
What's it like to carry that feeling with you?
It's sad, actually. You know, it's very sad. But if I lose that anger in me, I lose the fight for James. And I know, being a Catholic myself, that you have to forgive and forget. No. No. It had been different if my child had been seriously ill or knocked over or whatever, killed by a car or something like that. But this was vicious, and they wanted to maim and kill, and I hate them. I hate what they've done to my life and my kids' life.
Casbah Rockers. The wee Brits at Ferrigie Checkpoint bopped and smiled at the rhythmic racket. Friday night, a rock band banging out machine gun anthems. Lizzie, Clapton, and Blues and Royals in uniform, posted to the far edge of empire, tapped their feet, constrained by orders, but still young nonetheless for that. A rocker in a soldier's cap. Longing looks through the windows of the bar unite them with their opposite number. Friday night at the Casbah Bar, a crowd of long-haired boppers bopping, the war forgotten. Friday evening, the last sunshine of a summer's night bathes the faithful in a purple haze. Long forgotten, dangerous days, air guitars wielded in anger, heads bobbing like leather-clad whalers at the wall. Whilst across the street, in booted feet, gloved hands tap out rhythms on safety catches, smiling at crash endings, wistful witnesses to their youth.
Time now for this week's session and a songwriter who is no stranger to audiences in the Northwest. Glenn Rossborough first came to our attention as the frontman of Karma 45 many years ago and followed that up in more recent times with his band Intermission. In the last year or so, he's simply going by his surname, Rossborough, and has just released arguably his greatest single to date. He plays the Nerve Centre on Saturday, but before that, he's in session on tonight's show. This is Rossborough.
I hear the floor crumble and groan under my weight, but something more. I hear the crack, the glass is born beneath my feet. Still I take the step. Don't you know this is all gonna fade someday, but I can feel my life slip through your fingertips until you burn blue, until you burn.
So, folks, that was Bernadette Powell taking it easy on her voice today. So, what a magnificent piece of playing and singing.
So, how much do you really love your bees? Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you love your bees?
9 3/4.
And how much do you love your wife?
Oh, 10. I'm married 40 years, going steady, mm-hmm. 44. So
it's a good answer.
No, it's the right answer.
I'm Claire. 12 o'clock, I was out having a wee practice there in the River Foyle. I enjoyed it. It was about a wee bit scary to start off with, but after that I was grand. So I really enjoyed it, it was really relaxing.
My name is Raymond Gillespie. I'm from Little Guinea and Donegal.
And how was the race?
Oh, good. I really enjoyed myself.
What was the best thing? What did it feel like when you were out there?
Oh, the wind. I've known the sail. Oh, yeah.
I'm Kiara. Earlier on, I was out for practice at 12 o'clock, and some bits were scary. I felt like my boat was going to tip over a time, but I got through it, and I really enjoyed it.
What's the best thing about sailing?
You get to meet new people, and you get to learn like the disabilities that people have, and it learns you that if people does have a disability, they can do anything.
And I remember sitting when I was 31 and people were going, oh, you're well young, you're well this. And I says, well, I've been getting hit in the head for at least the last 22 years. I think that's long enough.
Did you lose the hunger?
Big time. Lost the heart for it.
How can that be? Because you're 31. For me, it's not unlike being a rock star. Everybody's playing your tunes. Everybody's singing your song. You're 31 at the peak of your powers, John.
Yeah, but you
walk away.
You don't lose your brain cells singing a song. And one of the fighters, a guy, Eric Donovan, an Irish fighter coming up, and he quoted me there in one of his fights there, I just think it was last week or so. He says, John Duddy wasn't far wrong when he says, the fighter, you're the first one to get hit, and you're the last one to get paid. And unfortunately, that's just the way the business is. And I know we hear about Mayweather and all these boys getting big paydays, but that's the top 2%.
Well, here I am flying through Abington. I've hardly had to touch the pedals yet. I noticed Patterson was stuck at the lights back there. But no such trouble for me. A few people out walking on their way to work. And I'm already down at the Peace Bridge. A few folk out walking the dogs. How you doing? And this makes it all worthwhile. You don't see a view like this in the car. Freewheeling over the Peace Bridge. We've got the rainbow sitting over the hills of Donegal. The foil stretched out on either side of me.
Classy bit of Moody Blues there for the morning commute to... And this has been a disaster for me. I'll tell you why. I've had five traffic lights on my commute, which is nothing. But four of them have been red today and the roundabout has been congested. So I'm just approaching the roundabout before Lawrence Hill, which could be the great divider on this little challenge.
And I have to say, there's always something nice when you come along and you see lines of traffic sitting at the lights. I can just fly on here up the quay. And this is one of the nicest places to cycle in Derry, because the hardest bit of the trip is yet to come. The dreaded Lawrence Hill up ahead.
And it's teeming with rain. So I have a feeling he might have this one in the bag.
That there's going to have to be, as far as public sector workers are concerned, there's going to have to be industrial action to do it. And we're here in London.
Around 100 people gathered in protest outside the Verbal Arts Centre. The banners and atmosphere of defiance were then brought inside as Dr. Anne Kilgannon, Chief Executive of the Western Trust, attempted to give the opening presentation.
But my point is that people have come to make their voices heard, and not everybody is speaking at the moment. I understand what's driving, I believe I understand the passion of duty.
Resign your position and you'll understand.
The meeting was planned to start with a presentation. After that, people were invited to sit down in several smaller groups around tables to discuss concerns with Western Trust staff. But the chief executive struggled to be heard above heckling.
I have
people have things.
Where's your hypocritical? You
fail
your doctor, go home.
At one point, some of the most passionate protesters noticed DUP MLA Gary Middleton and Councillor Hilary McClintock in the room and shouted, there's the DUP sitting in the corner as usual, followed by this chant.
Shame, 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 shame.
Their attention soon turned back to heckling the Western Trust. The DUP members left soon after that. The meeting had descended into chaos, and people who had wanted to hear what the Trust had to say began to leave.
Have you HIV?
There are no people leaving.
Leave
in
the room. You're not speaking for us, Mark.
There are people here who want to hear what the Trust has to say.
You're not speaking for us.
Thank you.
This is a disgrace.
Take a wander around the playhouse. You'll meet an amazing cast in every room. Dancers,
painters, singers and writers. And of course, those getting their very first taste of the arts, a taste that might just change their lives.
I see it all the time. I see it here with our Children's Art Festival during the summer, and we have a two-week masterclass. It's the longest running of its type in Northern Ireland. And I often see young children coming in who are here for 2 weeks and kind of over the 2 weeks again confidence. And at the end of 2 weeks, they're up performing on stage, and whether it's dance or drama. And I will often have parents come up to me and say to me, God, they never thought their son or daughter, who they felt was very shy, getting up and performing on stage. And it's this thing, it does give them confidence, and that kind of keeps them in good stead for going forward.
I think we should spend a little time reflecting on all that you have achieved. Don't you?
Yeah! In the beginning, we used to say these big red doors, you know, if we keep them open, interesting people will come through.
4, 5, 6, and you're going to put your hands
on. The audience hated the show. It was just a nightmare.
You're perfect.
What I also said was, the day the fun leaves this building, close the doors, because we failed.
Hey, audience, did you enjoy the show?
Yes. Hopefully.
So, you know, it's in having fun and being creative that you learn.
No matter whether the shop's full or not, Woody Kurt Miracle starts singing. And he's that kind of a singer, I can just mellow on with him and I sing along with him.
And dancing up the aisle.
That's Woody Kurt, 40 foot out of his... He's the most beautifulest person, Nick Wundy.
There
he's a
you
lovely
are. Thank
fella.
You very much, Maisie.
And he's got a butcher shop, like as I say. Anybody give their...
That's a proper butcher's. Haggerty's in the city.
This
is your tune. I'm not going to put you on the spot, yeah. But this is your tune, but I kind of am putting you on the spot. But you don't
know me. Oh, did you ask me to sing or something? Are we starting?
I never knew the art of making love, though my heart aches with love for you. Afraid and shy, I let my chance go by. The chance that you might love me too.
Goodness me, a star is born, folks.
There you are. Did you enjoy that music?
Oh, for goodness sake. We could spend an hour dancing because our time is gone.
The part is, you go in like, and it might be the candy store in the corner, so it's absolutely beautiful.
And you get a burl. You get a burl for your burger.
There you are, a burl for your burger.
Listen, Mark, very thought. We asked you to bring half a dozen sausages. We weren't expecting that generosity. Maisie, have a lovely day, my darling. And every day we see you is a good day.
But there's a young man there. I'm very glad that I've had the pleasure to meet.
Mark, thank you
very
much.
I have the pleasure to meet you too, Maisie.
I'll get two sausages next week.
My name is Dennis Orsi. My daughter was Lisa Orsi. She was a 22-year-old physiotherapist, lived in Singapore. And... climbed a mountain called Mount Brumo in East Java and unfortunately suffered from altitude sickness. And 18 or 19 days later, we donated her organs back in Singapore to mostly Asians and mostly Singaporeans. We knew Lisa was a donor. She was going to be a donor. We talked about this previously. It was a subject that we talked about around the dinner table, so we had no decision to make. I have met one of Lisa's recipients, her left cornea, a lovely man from Indonesia. He gets up every morning now at before sunrise and watches the sun rise with his children. Stood with me in the hospital in Singapore and sung When Irish Eyes Are Smiling, which I found very, very difficult, but very, very... I realised this man is going to take great care of his gift, or Lisa's gift to him.